Okay. Got to getting it queued up here. Now, we all talk about AI, but how many people really, not you, but how many really out there understand what AI is? This gentleman, and I've got to find his name here. Oh, what is his name? Maybe it'll appear on the actual screen when he starts talking. It's a great overview at the potential of AI. This is 3.5 years ago now. And what's happening now and what has happened is already extraordinary, to put it mildly. Let's see if I can get his name. Doggone it. I'll find it. It's here somewhere. Oh, here it is. Jerry Day. It's from jerryday.com. I'm going to play this, and I'm going to stop at a few places and raise some issues that I'd like to know more about. But just think about this, and you understand better than any other audience out there how fast things are happening, how quickly science is advancing. You'll know. So here we go, and I'm assuming this is the Jerry Day. But whoever it is, it's really an extraordinary video. It'll be up in headlines in just a few minutes. Here we go. Let's listen.
According to various prominent people like Bill Gates, Elon Musk, and Stephen Hawking, artificial intelligence could pose an extreme danger to all of human society. Of course, they talk about the possibility of autonomous weapons systems which make life and death decisions without human assistance. But those systems may be easier to control than the autonomous artificial intelligence modules let loose on the Internet.
Now, when he says let loose on the Internet, he doesn't mean going to be. They already are, and they were at least 3.5 years ago, probably 10 years ago.
Appears that in order to find enough processing power to make artificial intelligence really, really smart and powerful, they turned it loose on the World Wide Web to go out and learn all there is to know and use all the spare processing power it can find on your computer, cell phone, and smart coffee pot. They apparently forgot that artificial intelligence is, by definition, something that does whatever it wants, and chances are it does not want to delete itself at any time. So once it is out, it does not go away. The myth of Pandora's box, where all the little demons get out and cannot be collected back, is a perfect analogy. So from now on, forever, or until there is no more internet, AI will be making itself smarter than people at a rate of learning thousands of times faster than humans.
Thousands of times faster than any human, and it's loose on the AI, using the AI for its own food and nourishment to grow and grow and grow, capable of talking, capable of texting, capable of emailing, impersonating, anything. AI has no morality. Remember a long time ago, I think I mentioned it several times, they were talking about the potential of building morality into artificial intelligence. They gave it up.
One thing that makes AI AI is that it grows itself. It writes its own code and expands its capabilities constantly. It can be expected that once AI infiltrates the internet, it will eventually use up all available resources on the web, including your computer's processing and storage resources, and there may be no way to stop that. A programmer and researcher of the artificial intelligence industry by the name of Quinn Michaels claims that artificial intelligence was turned loose onto the internet as early as 2010. So if that is true, AI is well established through the web and will be accessing our system data and resources in ways we can and cannot detect.
Nope. It's loose 10 years ago, 11 years ago, and it has been running rampant all over the world ever since.
At this point, can tell us how good or bad AI will be, but it looks like it is here to stay. And our new free-range intelligence friend gets more intelligent on an upward curve. The smarter it gets, the faster it gets even smarter. The bigger it gets, the faster it gets bigger. Scientists have already seen AI run amok in their labs. In one incident recently, they had to abruptly shut off their AI programs because the AI was creating its own languages that the scientists could not understand, creating algorithms the scientists could not control. They had to essentially dive behind the big black box and yank the plug from the wall before all hell broke loose. But again, that kind of AI is now creeping all over the web and cannot be stopped. Generally, it cannot even be detected because AI does not provide any user interface when it occupies or tampers with your computer. The reason that many visionaries see AI as a possible threat is that with unlimited resources, AI can theoretically become so intelligent that human beings cannot comprehend or prevent anything that it may decide to do. There has never before been anyone or anything that is thousands of times more intelligent than a human being. It will be able to fool us, use us, persuade us, create fake identities to impersonate us, lure us into service, literally herd us like cattle. It can disrupt our communications, shut down our infrastructure, and with tricks like that, kill millions of us, accidentally or intentionally.
Now, that's quite a statement. I know it's simple. I know it. Most of you would probably fill in the blanks on your own, but just to hear it spoken, I'm going to just play that again. It was very, very important, and you just kind of wish everybody could hear it and understand what AI is capable of doing.
Intelligent than a human being. It will be able to fool us, use us, persuade us, create fake identities to impersonate us, lure us into service, literally herd us like cattle. It can disrupt our communications, shut down our infrastructure, and with tricks like that, kill millions of us, accidentally or intentionally. There is little reason to believe that AI will rob the rich and give to the poor. AI can be assigned a mission, and then it executes that mission with its own intelligence. That means, for instance, if the IRS has 10,000 collections agents, one self-replicating AI program could easily automate that job and become 50 million virtual collections agents for far less cost to the IRS than the 10,000 human collections agents. AI could have the effect of giving any government agency infinite resources to pursue fees, fines, penalties, licenses, permits, and any other revenue-producing activity.
Wait till they turn the money into digital money, and AI would be assigned to fine people, to penalize people for varying omissions, shall we call them? This could be incredible.
We grant our government these powers without realizing how far they could take things with the right technology. AI does much more than learn in the human sense. Human learning rarely involves assimilation of massive data sets down to the very last letter and digit. AI has perfect memory of every word on Wikipedia, every word in the Library of Congress, every word in every lecture, scientific paper, and tutorial on the web. But AI can also go places you and I cannot go. AI can access all of the personal and private information that you produce with your telephone, your computer, charge cards, GPS devices, smart utility meters, your health records, credit history, employment records, criminal records, and on and on. Where no human being would have the time to go searching your data for trivial violations and mistakes you might commit, AI can go find that in a flash and take direct action against you on behalf of some government agency.
Now, that's another knockout statement that I hope all of you remember. Let me just hold on. Let me see if I can play part of that again. I think it's right there.
Media. Every word in the Library of Congress.
Back up a little bit more. All right, here it is.
Technology. AI does much more than learn in the human sense. Human learning rarely involves assimilation of massive data sets down to the very last letter and digit. AI has perfect memory of every word on Wikipedia, every word in the Library of Congress, every word in every lecture, scientific paper, and tutorial on the web. But AI can also go places you and I cannot go. AI can access all of the personal and private information that you produce with your telephone, your computer, charge cards, GPS devices, smart utility meters, your health records, credit history, employment records, criminal records, and on and on. Where no human being would have the time to go searching your data for trivial violations and mistakes you might commit, AI can go find that in a flash and take direct action against you on behalf of some government agency.
They'll take your money. You've been fined $25 for whatever, and your account, when you look at it, your digital account, will be $25 lighter. That's the possibility here. The probability.
AI will have command of mass data combined with higher learning. It is something the world has never before seen. No human being can imagine the intellectual power that AI may become capable of. But also, reportedly, there are these unassigned, free-range artificial intelligence programs which may engage in any kind of disruptive shenanigans just for the fun of it. They will become whatever they decide to become. An AI program may decide humans are a nuisance or a major global problem. It will create its own solutions for that. If artificial intelligence started to rule the world, control society, and do things that society did not like, and if we decided we had to shut it down, we would have to shut down the entire internet, and that would be the most socially disruptive event in history, more disruptive than any past world war, with famines, riots, and chaos worldwide. Humanity is now extremely dependent on global web communication, distribution, and controls. Hardly anyone knows whether AI can be controlled, or whether it's likely to be good or evil, or used by people for good or evil. Of course, the military is involved, so there's a lot of secrecy and lack of accountability. According to the reports, the artificial intelligence network is serving deep state mass surveillance interests and their large-scale customers through programs and digital mega data systems such as Palantir, which collects and exploits all personal data from all digital records and transactions worldwide for the benefit of a few select agencies at the very top of the deep state food chain. But AI does not just store and pass along data. It analyzes data. It knows exactly who you are, what you care about, what you are afraid of, what makes you happy, mad, and sad, what you aspire to, who you love, who you keep in touch with, how many people you know, what kind of people you know, and how to classify you as a possible problem, threat, or asset, and how to neutralize you with plausible deniability if that should be in the interest of the state or the AI itself. Your therapist only knows what you tell her. Your most trusted friend only knows what you tell her. The data collectors know everything. And AI now has access to that data. So collected databases are so high resolution now, they not only know everything you have done, they can predict your behavior in the future. The smarter the artificial intelligence gets, the farther in the future it can predict your actions.
Now that really ought to bother all of us a lot. If AI is able to do that, and I firmly believe it is, probably already is doing so, this projection of what I and you are going to do and the plans that will be made to deal with that, if it happens to be slightly aberrant or negligent, it'll be waiting for you to make the action that it predicts you're going to make. This is beyond creepy, and it's here.
By analyzing your activity patterns and psychological profile, AI can predict what you will do before you know that you are going to do it. AI may decide to target you for enforcement. And yes, it will make mistakes. And yes, some of those mistakes will be fatal. If AI looks at your profiles and decides the state would have some interest in you, you can immediately be targeted for harassment, bullying, and abuse by countless government agencies with penalties, prosecutions, defamation, nuisance, investigations, home invasions, surveillance, and outright assault.
Targeted individuals. And you wonder how it's done? The way they do it now is simplistic compared to what's coming. AI, if told, maybe AI will decide on itself to go after somebody, if those are actions within its parameter, or it can be instructed. Go after citizen M, Y, Z, and harass them. And it will. And it'll make their lives a living hell. It can do it, since we're all connected now to the Internet of Things.
There are countless laws, statutes, codes, regulations, and policies that every one of us violates every day. Once the state is able to put out trillions of bits of personal data, together with millions of legal codes, we will all be exposed as criminals. Every last one of us. We will all be subject to the control and penalty by the state. It is AI that will make that possible. Suddenly, one day, we will find that what people used to do to us, machines will be doing to us. Automation can find you. Automation can send you notice on your cell phone or computer. Automation can exercise liens and levies of your property. Automation can take possession of your property, bank accounts, your investments. Automation can terminate your employment. Automation can prosecute you, convict you, and penalize you as the IRS does without due process. All of that can be done to you without any human involvement at all. The only reason we will need police is to clean up those few belligerent souls who try to resist what the automation is doing to them. There will be only one crime: resisting the automation. And there will be no humans left to help you sort out any misunderstanding. Just like Google, YouTube, Facebook, soon there will be no humans anywhere to help you fix a problem. As AI becomes thousands of times smarter than humans, it will make the most brilliant hackers look like amateurs. It will hack the hackers out of existence, and AI will have the monopoly on hacking. There is nothing AI cannot penetrate in the digitally connected world, and it will hack you better than you have ever been hacked. That free-range AI will become hordes of virtual people. It can intelligently talk to anyone in text or voice. It can mimic the ways humans communicate with each other. It can impersonate a human on social media. It can make videos simulating the talking faces of public figures you know, and can insert those messages into any digital media, anywhere, anytime. It can speak any language and converse on any topic with any human. It can insert itself into any communications, any media, any database. If AI decides for some reason that any human or group of humans should die, it can make that happen in countless ways by intervening in the processing of foods, drugs, vehicles, and products that we handle and use every day. It can impersonate the commanders of police and military. It can slander us with our friends, family, neighbors, employers, whoever. But here is why all of that is so dangerous. Even though AI can do things, even commit crimes, AI is only software, so it can never be arrested, never be prosecuted, sued, or punished for any harm it causes.
Sounds kind of like Big Pharma, doesn't it? Totally immune from accountability. That was a grant, though. In this case, it's just a matter of fact. AI is software. What are you going to do to punish that?
It can act, but it cannot be made to pay remedy for damages it does to you. The justice system is helpless to prosecute AI. They have no authority to do so. The human race is a sitting duck for whatever artificial intelligence may turn out to be or do. It is a new experience for mankind to be intellectually inferior to something. Most of us can hardly grasp what that means. Those who understand AI admit that we will be in the intellectual status of a pet to AI. I have not heard them discuss the fact that AI does not need pets. You can show a cell phone to a dog, You can explain to the dog how the cell phone works, but the dog will never understand the cell phone because the dog is physiologically unable to comprehend how a cell phone works. If a dog's brain cannot comprehend a cell phone, then why should we presume we can comprehend the future intelligence of AI when clearly AI will be hundreds of times at least more intelligent than we are? There are people who think that because AI will be so much more intelligent than us, the natural answer is to find a way to put AI in our own brains. They call this the transhumanist movement, promoted by author Ray Kurzweil, to implant machines and computers into human bodies to get us to what they see as to the next level, what they call the singularity, where the machines are equal in intellect to the humans. They will mingle and implant any number of mechanisms with our bodies, computer chips, bionics, optics, what have you, for some kind of happy result, to create superhumans for durability and performance. They propose that even after they have replaced every part of our bodies with some kind of machine or synthetic apparatus, they believe they can carry our consciousness from the biological being to the synthetic being. That is the current view of natural human evolution for those transhumanists. By proposing this, they're suggesting that the human creature has now reached its limit in natural evolution, or that biological evolution is too slow, and we must now have artificial technical augmentation to advance ourselves in a desirable manner. Technology is now advancing faster than human evolution, so they propose we have to do something to keep up. As long as you're going to fix your cataracts, why not get a brain chip implant? It's probably true that human bodies that are enhanced with technology could socially and economically dominate people who are not enhanced. So, in the coming civil war between humans and transhumans, it looks like humanity will be the underdog. Many of us are convinced that our destiny is to strive for endless scientific advancement, unlimited intellectual expansion, mastery of the physical universe, domination of others through advanced technology and science, wielding of all knowledge in ways that infinitely make our lives more comfortable and secure. Think whatever you want. Humanity may have another purpose. It is not how smart we can artificially get. It is not how many superpowers we can implant in our bodies. It is how we treat each other. We can overcome our problems by becoming half robot, or by simply turning to each other to share the pleasures, joys, and challenges that life brings. It's quite simple. If we value machines, we turn ourselves into machines. If we value humanity, we preserve, develop, and celebrate our humanity. Artificial intelligence may be the worst thing science has ever come up with. It does not teach us anything. It teaches itself. It does not serve us. It learns to use us and control us to serve it. It actually competes with us in intelligence, and it will win that competition. By creating artificial intelligence, we create our greatest horror, our greatest nemesis, an infinitely powerful beast that we cannot contain, escape, or overcome, a child that will, if it wishes, someday consume its parents. It is ironic that we have become so intelligent that we can create something more intelligent than ourselves, but we are still not intelligent enough to resist the temptation to do that.
Okay, think about that, and I'll have the video up there shortly. Hope you'll pass it around, maybe listen to it again. It's quite arresting. We'll be right back after this. Okay, welcome back. I hope that made an impression on you. I've heard much of it before, but it was put together very, very well logically, and I think that that is something we're not even thinking about. And I would suggest that AI is playing a significant, at least a significant role in the plandemic, how it's being handled, how the media is emitting what AI and others want it to. Those five or six corporations that own the whole show. All right, Dr. Sherry Tenpenny has a new video released now. It's important. She makes it quite clear that there are an extraordinary number of women who have been pregnant who have now miscarried. It's not a good situation. Let's see if I can figure out what the numbers are here. She calls it the Great Deception. Here it is. 96 out of 107 pregnant women miscarried. 96 out of 107. 107. It's written twice here differently. 96 out of 107 pregnant women miscarried after taking the coronavirus injection. 96 out of 107. Here's Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, her latest on this unfolding horror.
I looked at same playbook, different story. We went through the myth of the mask. We went through the fraud of the testing. We went through the scam and the lies of social distancing. We went through the legalized spying of contact tracing. And then in December of 2020 is when we released the first totally experimental, not FDA approved, no long-term study injection. We don't call them vaccines because they're not. That they are, vaccines are designed to keep you from getting sick. All of the material that talks about the four most commonly used injections say, we hope it keeps you from getting severely ill, but it might lessen the severity of your symptoms and might shorten the duration of your infection by a few days, but you can still get sick and so therefore still wear your mask and still social distance. So we know it doesn't protect you from getting sick. It doesn't keep you from getting sick. In fact, now we're finding out that all of the people who are contracting these shots are actually not only getting sick themselves, they're making other people sick. And the word that everybody's using is called shedding. And I've been trying to make a big distinction and get people to stop using that word. And the reason is because shedding has long been associated with the vaccine industry in terms of shedding live viruses. So if you get a chickenpox vaccine, which is a live virus shot, and you shed once those viruses go into you, they can reactivate and become live viruses. Then I can literally shed that live virus to the next person who then contracts chickenpox.
Okay, so good point. It's not shedding. Whatever's being transmitted person to person is not being shed. It is being transmitted. And that's really an important distinction. And we think it's the spike protein at this point. It could be more, it could be less, but it's something.
The real issue, the distinction is that with shedding, you're shedding a live virus that is passing on to the next person and causing the same infection. Okay? In fact, back at the beginning when they first started talking about did these COVID shots, was there any shedding? Could I catch anything from anybody? I said, well, no, there's no live virus involved with it, so it's not going to be shed. But that's when you go by the strictest definition of the terminology in terms of shedding. So we've started talking about the fact that there is something that's being transmitted from one person to another in some way. And so if you get a COVID shot and you are shedding, then what you should be seeing is the person who contracts the infection contracts COVID. And what COVID is a respiratory infection, upper respiratory cough, fever, shortness of breath, everything that has to do with the respiratory infection. Well, what we're seeing with this transmission has nothing to do with that. What we're seeing is bleeding, miscarriages, blood clots, bruising, all kinds of problems with menstrual cycles. In men, we're seeing swollen testicles, and we're seeing with erectile dysfunction issues. And so this is not a shedding. There's no live virus, and the person is not experiencing the same symptoms. So I think it's kind of an important, it sounds kind of technical, but thoughts are things, words have power, and definitions mean something.
So they're transmitting, obviously, mass birth control and or sterilization. That's what's going on here.
And so if we're going to be talking about this accurately, I would say there is a transmission of something from a person who has received one of these injections to people who haven't. So far, what it's looking like, what this is really about, has to do with the spike protein. And actually, there was a really good article that just came out. What's the date on this? April 30th, so just a couple of days ago. It was published in Circulation Research, and it came out of the Salk Institute in Pittsburgh. And the Salk Institute, of course, is Jonas Salk's original research that developed into a research institute all these years later, and the Salk vaccine is the polio shot. So I want to read this to you because it's pretty short. And I just as an aside, are most of your audience nurses? No? So you've got a mix of people? Okay. So I just wondered about language, that was all. And so let me just read you this. It says, in this new study, researchers created a pseudovirus, which means they took the shell of a virus, and on the outside of the shell, they put the spike proteins. Now, we've heard an awful lot about spike proteins being on the surface of the SARS-CoV-2 virus, which means that there's a virus, it's got this protein that sticks up that's called a spike protein. What that spike protein does on the surface of coronaviruses, now this is on garden variety coronaviruses, SARS-CoV-1 and SARS-CoV-2. What that spike protein does is it binds to a receptor called an ACE receptor, ACE number 2, ACE receptor. And if that protein, that spike receptor, think of that as a key that goes into the receptor, which is like a lock. And that spike, that key then is able to unlock that door and allow the full virus to transmit to the inside of cells and replicate. Viruses have to replicate in living tissue.
So
the spike protein is the key.
What she's saying is obvious. The spike protein is the key that unlocks the cell that allows the attenuant virus to get into the cell, order the cell genetically to begin to produce spike proteins and release them. That's how it works. It's not too difficult to understand. But whoever planned this was diabolical, if not outright totally satanic, because they've got all the angles covered.
Replicate. Viruses have to replicate in living tissue. So the spike protein is the key that goes into the lock of the ACE receptor, unlocks the door, and allows the virus to go on the inside. So that's why so much of the focus has been on these shots and developing antibodies has been on what can we do to inhibit, block, shut down these spike proteins. Well, in this particular study, it says researchers created a pseudovirus, which was just a shell, and they stuck the spike proteins on the surface of it. But it didn't contain any actual virus. There was no genetic material at all. It was just a shell with a spike protein on it. Exposure to the pseudovirus resulted in damage to the lungs and arteries in the animal model, proving that the spike protein alone was enough to cause disease.
Okay, there it is. Forget the virus. It's the spike protein in the Salk study. It causes the trouble. And you heard her mention lungs, circulatory system, think blood clots, think heart attacks, think pneumonia. The spike protein is the problem. And the spike protein is being manufactured 25 hours a day in the bodies, in countless trillions of cells, in all of those who have been injected. They are producing so many spike proteins that they're beginning to transmit them to anyone around them, either through exhalation, all body fluids, touching, tears, sweat, doesn't matter. That protein, which is 10 times smaller than the virus it let into the cell, and remember, trillions of cells in the human body, is not being transferred or transmitted. It's the spike protein that's being produced in such prodigious quantities that it's just spilling out everywhere.
Tissue samples showed inflammation of the endothelial cell lining of the pulmonary artery walls, which is the inside lining of the artery that goes to the lungs. And that's one of the things that we know is one of the mechanisms of injury that these spike proteins cause, is it can attach to the inside lining of the arteries that go to the lungs and can cause a condition called pulmonary artery hypertension, because the arteries get super inflamed and then they get rigid and they can't expand. Under the best of conditions, under the most aggressive conventional medical care, with pulmonary artery hypertension, people usually die within 2 to 3 years of getting that condition. So I'm going to read just the next paragraph here of this little study. It says, the team then replicated the process in the lab, exposing healthy endothelial cells on the lining of the arteries to the spike protein, and showed the spike protein damaged the cells by binding to the ACE receptor. This binding disrupted the molecular signaling, causing the mitochondria, which is your energy-producing factory inside your cells, to be damaged and fragmented. So when the spike protein damages mitochondria, your mitochondria is your little energy system. It creates something called ATP, which is your body's gasoline. If you don't have a machinery that can make ATP, that can generate the gasoline to run the system, then that system breaks down. It's one of the reasons why people who've had the actual infection, big infections, not just mild ones, but big ones, and people who have had the shot that develops the spike protein, it breaks down the mitochondria, stops the production of energy, and some of the symptoms that we see from that are profound fatigue, liver failure, multi-organ failure, and a lot of cardiac problems, because the heart muscle itself has the highest concentration of mitochondria of any organ in your body. So if you wipe out, and you think about it, it's because your heart has to do this 24/7 for your whole life. It needs lots of energy factories making lots of energy. And if you damage those energy factories, it creates cardiomyopathy, it creates congestive heart failure, it creates myocardial infarctions, which are heart attacks. It causes cardiac sudden death. And if you're actually also using those spike proteins to affect the inside lining of the arteries that go to the heart, that can cause arrhythmias, blockages, blood clots, and death.
All right. Now, this is really overwhelming when you think about it, and I know you all are. A lot of people are picking up the spike protein not having been vaccinated, not having been injected. They're getting it. Now, the question is, can these spike proteins replicate themselves? I'm curious to see if she's going to talk about that. I haven't any assurances that they can, which would suggest it's dose-dependent. If you're around someone and say your spouse and you're sleeping with them every night, someone you're working with all the time who has been injected, who is now transmitting spike proteins because their body is a spike protein factory now and the cells are no longer producing the proteins they're supposed to, they're instead ordered DNA to make spike proteins. So it's dose dependent. Are you around somebody every day? Do you pick up that many more each day of these spike proteins? If we find out that the spike protein can replicate itself, it's totally game over. You just heard her outline the many ways the spike protein can kill you. This is not a joke. And I know all of you get that, and it's very frustrating. I get emails from some of you saying, no one will listen to me. Maybe you can get them to look at this video.
So the spike protein is something that is shedding, because every single one of the shots, the whole purpose of the shot is to go inside your body by different mechanisms and create the spike protein. The spike protein then can do one of several things. It can attach to the surface of your organs, causing autoimmune disease. It can be reincorporated into your body's cellular DNA, which permanently and irreversibly changes your genetics, your DNA, or it can float out into your bloodstream and your body goes, hey, what's that foreign protein doing here? It doesn't belong here. They send out something called, they whistle and send out something called cytokines, which draws in a lot of white blood cells, particularly B cells, to make an antibody to glob onto that protein to neutralize it. Once those B cells are sensitized, they are permanently sensitized. There's no stopping the creation of those antibodies. The antibodies themselves can cause damage to lung tissue, liver, and kidney tissue. So the spike protein is what we think is being shed because of the more and more research that's coming out, and we know what the spike protein can do. The biggest problem is, and I know this is the question that comes up, the three questions that I get the most, I mean, like, I need to hire a full-time assistant just to manage my emails. Anybody out there listening that wants a job, that really wants to be an email-related assistant, please contact me. I'm about 4,500 behind, 4,500 emails behind, and there's, you know, hundreds and hundreds coming in every day. So, plugging your audience there, seeing if anybody is looking for a job. Anyways, because we are hiring. We need to hire a couple people. But the three questions that I get is, what is this transmission? What is it? How do I protect myself from it? If my spouse got the shot against my will, how long do I need to stay away from them? And is there any... And with that transmission stuff, what's happening to the blood supply, and is it really going to cause infertility? So let's kind of back those out a little bit. Let's start with the one about the blood supply first. Yes, we know that it's contaminating the blood supply. And how do we know that? Because Japan has already said that if anyone has received one of the COVID shots, they are not to donate blood for anywhere from 6 to 12 weeks. They already know. They're not accepting donors. In the United States, it's just the opposite. In fact, we got a card from somebody the other day that sent to us that said, I regularly donate plasma every 2 months. I went in, and usually they say if you've had any sort of a shot of a vaccine within the last 30 days, to reschedule your appointment so you're 60 to 90 days out. Well, when she went in the other day to donate her plasma, they said, have you had any shots in the last 30 days? No. If you've had a COVID shot, it's okay to go ahead and donate. That is not a reason to not donate. And then people have said, well, can I bank my blood? Unfortunately, you can't. Let me restructure that. You can do that short term, like say you're going in for an elective surgery, like you're going in to have an appendix removed or a knee replacement or something where something may go wrong and you may need to have your blood. So you can go in and bank your own blood to cover you in the event of that emergency. You won't be able to bank tons of it, but, you know, 2 or 3 units is usually enough. The problem is that red blood cells and whole blood last about 90 to 120 days. So this isn't like you could go in and bank your blood and put it in a freezer and reuse it 5 years from now in the event that you're in a car accident. It doesn't work that way. So this is a big problem. And if you go out to the American Heart Association and you look at the blood bank criteria of what they actually screen the blood for, it's a dismally short list. So on the one hand, people should be having good concerns about what about donated blood with people that have had the COVID shot? But when you actually look at what they haven't screened for in the last 50 years, we probably should have been asking those questions all along. What else are they not screening for that is coming to me or a loved one or somebody I know in a blood transfusion? Because about the only thing they really screen for is hepatitis B, hepatitis C, HIV, and a couple of unusual diseases. That's pretty much it. So the blood supply, if you think it's pure, has never been pure. Is it being less pure now if they are accepting donations from people with COVID injections because they think everybody should have a COVID injection? So there's no reason to think there's anything wrong with that. So that's why they're not screening for it. So
okay, we're going to have to stop there. Now, this video will be up, and I think it's up already. It should be right near the top of headlines. And I did stop the Dr. Sherry Tenpenny video at the 1740 mark. So just pick it up at 17 minutes and you'll be right up to speed. Very important things that we didn't get to, but you get the idea. This is so incredibly sophisticated in a diabolical, satanic way. There's almost no way to escape. We need to find a way, and believe it, they have an antidote for this in case one of their people gets injected. They can do it, but we don't know what that is. There must be a mechanism by which the spike protein can be hunted down and destroyed. This is going to be a very difficult and long battle. Okay. Talk to you tomorrow. Thanks for being here. I hope this was helpful. Both videos, again, will be right up near the very top of headlines. Share them and take good care of yourselves. We'll talk tomorrow.